our footy conversation. Actually, we might digress at the start in the mind of Blighty. Malcolm, great to have you with me.
Well, hello, Jared. Yeah, what a wonderful little summary there. I hate to say this, but I think the Olympics are just in front of mind at the moment rather than footy.
Yes.
Which is okay, isn't it? It's okay.
Is there... So, Dean Boxall's captured us as a coach. I spoke to him the other morning, and he was magnificently eccentric, Malcolm. And I must confess, while we were chatting, I was thinking, oh, there's a little bit of Malcolm Blight in Dean Boxall.
Well, on our radio show last night, I got some words that he, after Ariana won the second gold yesterday, and he said, I can't help jumping around. This is Dean Boxall, Ariana Titmus's coach, as we know, after a wins. And he said, it's very simple. And this is the exact words I've got. When the athletes leave the pool deck, they begin the recovery process and switch off. He then goes on to say, I go home and try to find a way to get better. I don't turn it off. And I must say, and all the time that I've been doing it, I've said forever, I could never, ever let the game go. I'd have to go home, analyse it, work out why, how do we get better. If we lost particularly, I'd be up till 4 or 5 in the morning trying to work out the best way to show the players on Monday, winning starts Monday, exactly that, how to get better. I've never heard another coach say that. I mean, I was in awe of him, the fact that he couldn't let it go and tried to get the team or her better. I used to do it all the time, regardless of what people down the Pennine Highway think. Committed as anything I ever was, how much I did away from the club to actually trying to help us get better. And sometimes it just might have been a fingernail. You know, she might have put a fingernail wrong, and that's what she helped him with. I loved it. Showed the fair dinkumness of it all, and actually the love of it.
And the expression of emotion, Blighty. I could picture the 94 elimination final. Bit of a run and a leap onto a pack.
Yeah, all of that, yeah. I mean, it is. Sometimes it just gets you. And you know, once you finish playing, I mean, the energy sort of goes a little bit. But occasionally there's a performance. And obviously a gold medal, Olympics, wow. I can't even imagine. Although standing up at the MCG with 100,000 people there, collecting a gold at the end of this season is pretty good, though. But very similar. And I get that emotion in a coach. I get that how it all affects everyone differently. But that certainly affected me. And also limited my time in the game as a coach because of it. You sort of burn out a bit earlier.
Right. So that's a very real phenomenon that you experienced.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, both at Geelong and Adelaide. Probably at Woodville too. Yeah, no, I did. Yeah, I used to go hard. It wouldn't leave your body, so that's okay. That's what you take on. You knew it. I knew it after a lot of years. I did it for a lot of years. I knew it was going to happen somewhere.
Which sports grabbed you at the game so far?
Well, I know all the medals have come from the water, but I thought when I was growing up, water was just for drinking and washing. You know, I lived fair, not far from the beach. We used to go there on Sunday, but that was fun days. But the ovals, the green got me. So I'm a green person, you know, footy and cricket and that sort of stuff. So, you know, I was an observer of the water sports. I mean, you could swim and all that, but not very good. But, you know, I mean, no, that wasn't in my neighbourhood. That we didn't have anyone. No, I didn't know anyone that had a pool, actually, when I grew up.
Did you muck around with any of the Olympic sports?
Probably high jump a little bit. Yep. I mean, I love jumping. And I love the 200 and 400, probably. Not so much the sprint, but I could do it. But more that, just that middle distance, 2 to 400 probably was... When I was having a crack, sometimes, you know, it was a bit hard to do that with a footy in your hands. But, yeah, probably that distance was mine.
Let's take Jason in Geelong, Blighty. Jason, welcome.
Jared, I'm just trying to relate the performance of Arnie yesterday, and I'm thinking about football moments compared to the last 50 metres. It felt like the ball was crumbing around on the half-back flank with about 20 seconds to go. Your side's 5 points down in a grand final. The ruckman taps it out, the ball's in the wing, and it goes into the forward line, and we win. I just try to work out the parallels of sport between watching Arnie come over the top and just hoping your team gets up.
What about the scarlet toe poke to Ablett, kick to the top of the square? Yeah. Chapman snaps the winner.
Yeah, that's indelible, isn't it? I mean, it certainly is. No doubt about that, and Yeah, there hasn't been a lot of close. I mean, the average score in a grand final is about 38 points, the winner, for a lot of years. So we've had a few close ones, but generally that doesn't, it hasn't been the norm. A lot happens during the year like that, of course, and we can remember those games. But yeah, the grand final haven't actually produced that magical moment yet, has it? Probably Dom Sheed, that kick from the boundary line. But there was still a fair bit of time to go then, wasn't there? It wasn't as though it was, you know, right in the last minute of the game.
No, there's still a few minutes that played out thereafter. All right, so to our footy conversation, Blighty, and Carlton has lived the week in the headlines. Their a diabolical third quarter against North Melbourne sorted that. The external review would seem to be finished and about to be tabled. So there are big contemplations for the Blues. It's not limited to David Teague, and yet the coach always wears the brunt of it. I didn't feel coming into this year that this was Teague's year of decision. That is now seeming how it's going to be. What is your view of what Carlton and David Teague should be doing?
I think last week, I spoke and thought that I thought he would survive, and his record's not that bad. If you look at the previous eight, I think I looked at the previous 7 or 8 years, and the coaches, which included the greatest of the longest serving, Mick Malthouse. I mean, the win-loss ratio is not as bad as a lot of the others. I would have thought you're going to have a hiccup somewhere along the line. I would have thought that, you know, where they sit now, okay, it's not ideal, but, you know, they've won 7 games, win another one, that's 8. That's a nice launching pad from where they've been. So I don't know what the panic is, and I don't know why the pressure came. We're going to lose games. North Melbourne have beat other teams, and bottom teams sometimes beat the top teams, particularly, it seems to me, towards the end of the season, we get these upsets. It comes in all shapes and sizes, so I wouldn't panic.
Would it be an overreaction if Carlton had sweeping change to your eye?
They've had a bad 25 years, haven't they?
Mm-hmm.
But they've chopped and changed a lot of coaches. They've chopped and changed at the board level. They've chopped and changed at CEO level. They've made a lot of changes. They've tried to correct it. There's no one sits there and wants to lose. So, but sometime you've got to put a stake in the ground. Maybe this is the time.
To hold.
Yep.
Yep. So if this was your decision, you would continue on with David Teague?
Yeah, but I don't know the machinations inside, and that's always a bit of a problem. As I said to you, you know, we just observe what we see through our own eyes. What we can't hear is what's being said. And sometimes, you know, that can be really good or not so good. So, you know, that's the thing. That's why any review's got to be done from the people internally. I don't get why you go externally. The Adelaide Football Club did it and went immediately to the bottom of the ladder and still struggling. I don't get it.
Would you play Charlie Curnow this weekend?
Yeah, you'd see him on the track. I mean, there's still enough people there to say, look, I think he's fit enough to play. If he's positive and everyone, he's done the work and he's done the hard yards, he might be a little bit rusty, we get that. But if he's fit and his body's good, why wouldn't you play him?
Yep, so a couple of scratch matches in the VFL, that's you wouldn't worry about a full-blown VFL game after 2 years on the sidelines?
No, not really, no, because you'd see his form, you'd see the way he runs, you see the way he gets through the line, all that sort of stuff. I mean, that's what you're there for. I tell you what, you can't write any script for that. All you can do is what your eyes see. Is his technique good? Is his body look right? Is he hard enough? Is he fit enough? And then you make a decision. But you know what? You do that on every player every week.
Yeah, yeah.
It's no different.
So once you're ready to play, you play him.
You play, yeah, absolutely.
So the other key forward on Friday night is going to be Max King, who's turned in the performance so far. I guess the performance that so many Saints fans were looking for, the 8 contested marks and the goals over in the West, is what do you see in the young buck of a key forward?
What I look for first is in tall blokes. If they've been tall all their life, and this is a general rule, but I reckon it's right 9 out of 10 times. If they get away with being tall and don't learn to jump at a very young age because they're not coached properly, then I fear for them. But he actually jumps. So when you get a tall one jumping like that, you know, like a Hipwood or someone, you know, those blokes, they become very dangerous very quickly. Not frightened to jump at the ball, he can do that. And all he'll do is, as he gets a fraction stronger, he doesn't need to get much bigger, by the way.
Yep.
You don't ever want to lose that agility. And I always find them putting too many weights on those sort of blokes eventually anchors them to the ground and they lose their jump. They are dangerous because they can jump honestly at the footy.
So has he got the capacity of being the long-term key forward for Secunda that they've had him to be?
Absolutely, yep. Yeah, I think he's got some... And his hands look good to me. Sometimes, if you look at Buddy, you know, Buddy's been a great player. I'm glad he can't mark, as in the sense of like a Carey or a Dangerfield or a Fife, because he's got that bent right arm. It's always been there and it's never been corrected. And that's why he always two grabs. All the rest of it, you know, he's got 9 out of 10 great things. But he could have been a 10 out of 10 player, I reckon, just by straightening up that right arm of his, which bends.
The mind of Blighty is a beautiful and often mysterious thing. Your questions, there's a queue on the phone. Blighty, the first one from the text. You're one of the greatest ever Kangaroos. Just interested on your thoughts on the progressions of North Melbourne throughout the year. I find it somewhat exciting.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. No, I, a couple of years ago, we had a birthday party of some old North Melbourne people, and you know they couldn't see the forest for the trees. But I said, there's a guy called Nick Larkey and Cameron Zerha. They are two really good young forwards. They're at the start. Taron Thomas had just come to the Cubs. Simcombe was there. So I said, hey, look, I reckon they've all got something. Just let's wait a while. Let's just wait a while. And I think that sort of stuff is starting to happen and unfold a bit now, particularly around the midfield and particularly forward, which is usually where you win games.
Peter's in Ballarat for you, Blighty. Peter, fire away.
Morning, Jared and Blighty. Hope you're well and good to speak to two of the smarter people in football. I've got a question for you about the deliberate out-of-bounds rule, both to both of you, really. It drives me nuts, and I just imagine going to the footy with a person fresh off the plane from overseas when they're allowed to come and explain to them the rules. You can kick down a line and it happens to bounce the wrong way, and an umpire, particularly one with a black hat that wears number 12, will say, nuts, it's deliberate out-of-bounds, but we kick down the line with no other options. We know it's going to go out of bounds. And you have magnificent backmen like the Port Adelaide captain. His name's escaped me, but he'll just...
Tom Jonas.
Double... Jonas, yeah, brilliant footballer. Love him. Double-fisted, aim straight at the boundary. That's all he wants to do, apart, of course, stopping his forward getting the ball. But no worries. Throw it in, boys. But you just happen to do a little crooked kick or whatever. I remember Macca, McDonald at Melbourne against GWS early in the year when he slapped it out of bounds just to get rid of the thing. It was paid deliberate. Can you explain to me fix this?
Yeah, you can fix it easy by the AFL not going falling asleep at the wheel. Now, I've been very critical of this. In the Sandful, in the South Australian League, it is last disposal. Just remember this, last disposal is a free kick for the opposition, like every other sport in the world but ours, virtually. So, very simply fixed. Right now, it's an adjudication by the umpire, which 50% of the crowd loves and 50 don't. I mean, they get booed regardless. They've got to make an instant decision. Did he mean to do it? Didn't he? So sometimes they veer on that and sometimes they don't. They don't have to do that, make a decision. If you handball it or kick it out of bounds, no matter what actually happens, even if it's a shot at goal, it'll save some less congestion. It'll save boundary lines being boundary umpires throwing in and actually accumulating more players around a congested area. It is, I don't know why, I'm only thinking because someone else thought of it, maybe the AFL haven't done it. And that's pretty hard. And Stephen Hocking should have done something about it by now. I know he's not there now, and I hope Andrew Dillon, who's in the chair now, changes the rule. You could change it immediately tomorrow. It won't change the game. It'll make the game so much better.
Peter, you asked the exact right question. Well done. Angelo's on the road with Blighty. Angelo, fire away.
Good morning, Jared. Love your show, mate. And I love Blighty. I'm a disappointed Collingwood fan, and Blighty was one of the greatest players ever and one of the greatest coaches. I'd love him to coach Collingwood. I know it's a big job. If he doesn't, who would he recommend between Choco and Mike Pike? That's what I think it's up to.
Don Pike, yep.
Yeah, oh, sorry, yeah.
So first, really good, you have to answer the first question, Blighty. Will you coach Collingwood?
Yeah, I just look at my birth certificate, Jared, and it probably just it says don't. actually, good call. I tell you what. Mark Williams, yeah. I mean, he's a premiership coach. I mean, I know you need players. Yes, you need players, but you can actually get from, you know, top four to the premierships. Bloody hard to do. You need something. You know, there's got to be that magical formula, which no one knows what it is. It just happens, and you happen to be there. But Don Pike, I thought he was okay at Adelaide. A lot of people said he didn't have a plan B, but I think he'll learn from that. So would Michael Voss. I'm a great believer in those that have done it before, maybe haven't got there, have still got that hunger and that desire to actually do it. So I think they're both good calls, and I honestly think both would be okay.
Angelo, thank you for your call. Ash is in Laverton. Ash, what do you got for us?
Carlton supporter here. Malcolm, I'd love to hear your thoughts on Patrick Cripps. There's a lot of doomsdayers. A lot of people saying the game has passed him. He can't get back to what he was. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, you know, weight slows the train, as they say in the old days. Injuries slow down players, and he's had his share of injuries. What I think he needs now is to really freshen up over a pre-season, you know, injury-free. I mean, he's been a great player. He still could be a great player. I still think that he could play, and this sounds a bit funny, kick the ball to him, funnel it to him, a bit more like the old centre-half forward. I know he's very good around the ball, but Sam Walsh has actually, you know, done his stuff at the moment. If he came back bright and fit, he'd be terrific. If not, put him as sort of key forward, because he's as competitive as anything when the ball's in the area. And I think maybe that a traditional key forward position might suit him.
Yep.
Hey, Jerry, can I just bring something up?
Go.
You asked me about the Essendon GWS game last week.
Yes.
When the Essendon side looked as though they controlled early and then got overtaken. You know, in the last quarter, I was screaming at the TV. I've got to get this off my chest. Yep. I've said it before, but it's fallen on deaf ears. About 10 years ago, there was a meeting of most coaches in the AFL, assistant coaches and everybody else. And at that meeting, I just did not attend, because at that meeting, they must have all decided, when we go forward now, we'll kick it to the pocket. Why will you pick it to the pocket? Oh, because we're good at boundary line throw-in congestion. Oh, yeah, great. That's terrific. So actually, what actually happened is, a lot of clubs now, a lot of coaches, I call it panic coaching. What actually happens is, when they kick to the front of the square they used to, sometimes they get open up through the middle of the ground, right? So what they do is veto that kick to the front of the square. Panic. Once or twice a game, big deal. I can tell you now, kicking goals from pockets of boundary line throw-ins, all it does is create points. All it does is create more tackling and brings more pressure from the opposition because they throw more people down. I don't get why you don't say as a coach, how can we get better at getting to the front of the square, your small forwards, your mids and all that sort of stuff. It would be a cleaner, better game and much better for the players. And I would reckon you got more chance of winning. In that last quarter, Essendon kicked to the pocket three or four times in that last quarter when they had them on toast. I know Stringer and I know Wright missed a kicks at goal. They were long kicks, way out in front. They kicked too many times to the pocket. Why they do it, it is panic coaching, and most coaches do it, and it drives me nuts. And I reckon everyone following football now should ban that kick to the pocket.
Ban the kick to the pocket, Blighter. You're in good touch today. I've got Pete on the road for you. Hello, Pete.
G'day, guys. Love the show. Love when I hear him, Blighty. And Blighty, please, not too much sense. You're going to baffle too many people out there. And I'm being ironic, cynical. Blighty, a philosophical question for you. If you don't mind, since we're talking about Olympics, if you were not an AFL or football coach and you had been an Olympic coach, what sport would you see yourself potentially coaching? Because not only are you a great motivator, but that stare of yours would scare the crap out of a couple of people in the bowl, not a problem. So what sport do you reckon, boy?
Oh, gee, mate. Well, I've vetoed water sports because, yeah, as I said, it's for drinking and washing. I think field events, probably, it's anything on grass. As I said, I quite enjoyed the 200-metre, 400-metre. And there's a bit of tactics in that as well, isn't there, particularly around the bend. So I think that sort of thing, if you're going to do an Olympic sport, it would be that. Javelin and shot put, probably not. Those field events not for me. But certainly running on the grass would have been my go, I'd reckon. And, you know, I suppose I could have trained a bloke like Usain Bolt. I would have been okay with him.
Nah, he'd have been wasted on you. You could have lifted somebody up to beat him, Blighty, with all the tricks and the words. Hey, was the game failed by the throwing of elbows that's gone unpunished throughout the year?
It drives me nuts. I think I said it round 1, 3 and 8, you know. And it's a bit like the swing tackle. You know, I mean, it will cause havoc. And heaven forbid, just like the sling tackle, throwing back an elbow, I don't care if you miss. Give them a week, and I'll say it again, give the next one 2 weeks, and then the next one 3 weeks. It'll go. It'll be eradicated. That can create, I've seen too much damage with elbows in my lifetime on the football ground and off it. Get rid of it. Should have been done the first time. The judiciary of the AFL needs a good kick up the bum. Fair dinkum for letting it happen.
Yep, yep. Who's your one seed? D's, Dogs or Cats?
I'm a stickler for what I thought the Bulldogs at the start of the year were my smoking.
They
okay, they're probably not. Yeah, they're not quite the smoking now. But I love what the Cats are doing, and I mean the D's and Port Adelaide. I mean Brisbane maybe, but I just think Brisbane sort of had their chance last year. You know, playing all those games at home. Not to say they're out of it. I've just got a funny feeling that top four. Melbourne will lose one. They'll all lose a game before the season's end, and everyone will get written them off again. But what you need to do is qualify. Top four, I think we know. But we do know, this is unbelievable stat, isn't it? The last six or seven years, the number one seed hasn't won the flag.
That's it.
So anywhere in that top four, anyone's got a chance. I still think the Bullies, probably the Cats right now, but Melbourne and Port Adelaide aren't out of it.
Enjoy round 20, Blighty. Great to chat.
Good on you, Jared. Bye.
Malcolm Blight for the official AFL Select Footy Stars collector cards for serious collectors, big and small.